Sean Mice here for our coaching call today, and I'm excited about what I'm going to share today. It kind of fits outside the box of what normally gets put into internet marketing training or campaign training or coaching program training, building your business, and yet it's been such a critical component of my own business, and there was almost an external influence that led me to the place where this was important, and then through multiple study and implementation on what actually goes on in your campaigns as they happen. And that, I'm not even sure that many marketers see everything that I'm getting ready to share with you if they don't run long-term campaigns. So many folks will build scalable campaigns, but those scalable campaigns are based on one product or one product leading to an upsell, and their business the way that their business runs is based on scaling out the sale of one to two products. So an initial product and then a coaching program, et cetera. But because of the fact that over the course of the last 13 years, I've run probably hundreds of campaigns, linked those campaigns together, and then have been able to study clients longitudinally over time to be able to see how this occurs. And the concept here, the idea here is that folks go through a trust curve with you. So when they join your list, they only know what they were told about you. Now, when I was doing article marketing, one of the things that was very, very interesting to me was that the average person didn't join my list until they had read at least 7 articles on average. Now, some people, 5% maybe would join after reading one article, another 5% or 10% after reading 2 articles, and then some people, would take 8 articles or 14 articles. But the average was about 7 articles is what we calculated, about 7 articles before people would join the list. And I want to take that into today. I believe that there's a number for YouTube, and I don't know what it is, but let's say it takes an average of 7. An average of 7 YouTube views of 7 different videos before they join your list. And some people might join on the first one, some people might join on the 35th one, but that there's an average 7, 8, 9 videos before they join your list. If you're doing social media, say Facebook, my guess is that it takes more interactions than that with Facebook just because of the more Spartan nature of true social media such as Facebook. So that maybe it's a 14. So the average person, and I don't know what it is for your list, but let's just say that the average person takes 14 touches on Facebook before they would become, say, a subscriber. LinkedIn, maybe that's 10. I don't know, just guessing that maybe it's 10. 10 touches in LinkedIn before they become a subscriber. And so what that means is that if you get an organic subscriber that comes from content marketing, which is huge these days. It's huge. It's just not called article marketing anymore. But it encompasses articles, blog posts, videos, and social media that delivers content. That's one key thing about social media. It's got to deliver content. But all of those fall under the arena or the umbrella of content marketing. And so what happens is when you have content marketing generated leads through YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, any blogs that you post on, any blogs that you write for, any networks that you're a part of, any of those things. When people have multiple touches, by the time they get onto your list, they are already beginning to trust you, either because of, something that you've done in the past, but most likely because of what you've taught them. So you've taught them something already. They trust you that you've taught them something. Many times they may have implemented whatever it is that you taught, And then over time, after they've implemented it, they get onto your list. Once they're on your list, there's already some trust built. So the first email that goes out is growing on that trust. It's building on that trust. Okay? And so then what happens is, based on the topic that somebody comes onto your list, you're going to make them a product offer. Now, that product offer might be immediate. That product offer may be in 3 to 5 days, or it may be something like coaching that you might offer in 7 to 10 days. And obviously, a percentage of people are going to purchase. Those are the people that there's a cross-section of two very important components that are happening in order for somebody to buy the first 10 days on your list. Okay? Those people, two things are going on. One is that they need what you have now. Just because somebody joins your list and doesn't need what you have now, when you release another product in your list in the fifth mini automated launch in your 45-day campaign, then that topic may be the one that they need. And so when somebody comes onto your list, they don't always need exactly what it is that you're offering first. The second thing that happens is that those people that purchase the first 10 days have developed enough trust with you to invest whatever you're asking. And the more that you're asking, the longer it takes. It's not the longer it takes on average, although it usually does take longer. The key here is that the trust curve takes longer to develop. And so at a higher price, there's a higher level of trust. And I want to illustrate that. Let's say that you go on a vacation somewhere, and on your vacation somewhere, you are approached with a street vendor that gives you an opportunity to buy some trinket for $1. Okay? So assuming that this is not a low budget, a very, very, very exceedingly low budget vacation, $1 is tip money. You know, $1 is pocket money. And so the trust can be very, very low that the $1 trinket that they sell you is going to hold up on your journey back. Obviously, you'd like it to, but if it doesn't, you're not going to cry tears over $1. Okay? However, if somebody has a $200 trinket available, you're probably not going to buy from a fly-by-night street cart right out in the middle of the street. You're probably going to want to buy it from a building that has a name on the front, that has people working inside of it, and a real cash register, and the credit card logos, things that would lead you to believe that this is a reputable company selling. And then anything in between. So, you know, let's say that you're walking, you know, and there's a street cart that has something for sale for $20. Your trust level has to be higher than $1, but it's still probably disposable. If things don't work out, it's not the end of the world. Well, the same thing happens on your list, okay? And that's one of the deceptions, I think, that happens with your tripwire marketing, is that although it creates a buyer, what it does is it selects for buyers who are able to have lower levels of trust, which is fine, because a percentage of those people will upgrade over time, but it can also degrade the trust level of folks that might invest, say, $1,000 with you 10 days from now. Now, in some instances, can it yield to a sale because of the psychological principle of starting out with a small purchase? It gives people a psychological commitment to you, and then they're open, willing to reopen their wallet. Yes. So there's a small percentage of people that will happen to. And it's easy for us to look at a funnel that some marketer has, and they say, well, 80% of my $1,000 buyers buy a tripwire first. But notice they're not split testing that. They don't have a real control. If you're scientific in nature, you understand the idea of controls. They don't have a real control that says maybe more people would have bought the $1,000 product if there hadn't been a tripwire. So we don't know that. But all I'm doing, I'm not teaching on tripwires, I'm not teaching on $1,000 products right now, I'm teaching on a trust cycle. So you've got this trust cycle. The question is, what can we do to build trust as quickly as is necessary to get folks to trust you enough to invest the money to purchase whatever it is that you're offering. Now, keep in mind that you can have all the trust in the world, but if people don't need what you are offering, they're not going to buy it. They can trust you through the moon, but if you own a dog and they're selling cat food, your conversion rate's going to be zero, right? Okay, so it's critical that they need whatever it is that you have. But assuming that they need it, the trust is a critical component. Okay, now I want to take a detour for a minute. As you may say, well, some marketers sell without trust. And you're absolutely right. And they make up for that. They substitute for that by having multiple testimonials. They substitute for that by having beautiful, pretty pictures. They substitute that with scientific language that leads people to buy. Okay? Now, again, this is a dog leg here. This is a kind of a side road. I'm not going to spend long on it, right? But you get to make a choice. Okay? You get to make a choice. Do you want to market to folks that don't trust you yet? And if that's the case, then you're going to have to build up the kind of things that create a pseudo trust, an instantaneous, overwhelming desire to buy from you right now. I want to bring up a challenge, though, that happens when you try to just get people to buy from you right now by using a bunch of pretty pictures, NLP, hypnotic statements, and a whole bunch of carefully curated testimonials that match the demographics of the person reading it. Okay? What happens is you're selecting for people who are willing to make a decision about their life change that you're asking them to make based on instantaneous knee-jerk reactions. Like, you are selecting for people who make knee-jerk reactions based on pretty pictures. And the problem with that is the people who need some time to cogitate and that are not swayed by pretty pictures and that are not swayed by testimonials that are sometimes not real and that are not swayed by NLP and hypnotic statements, they're not buying from you because you think the sales are made from your list. 5% of people who will make purchases based on these fly-by-night concepts are buying, and you say, well, the industry standard is 5%, and 5% have bought. I shouldn't do anything else. You never build the trust. You're leaving people on your list who don't trust anybody else. They don't trust you now, and that will never buy from you because you never develop the trust. Okay, now, in a competitive world where most of your competitors are doing these kinds of methods to get people to more quickly take action and buy from them, okay, quickly. Again, nothing wrong with that. It depends on your strategy. But when you go into a big market like that, what's the easiest way to break into the market? My belief is that the easiest way is to simply become the person that the buyer trusts the most. You see, hardly anybody else in your market is developing trust the way that you could. I genuinely believe that. And if you'll think about it, you should be on 10, 20 lists in your market. You probably notice that the things that people are doing to build trust is low. If you don't trust your competitors, then do the buyers in your market trust your competitors? Probably not. The buyers in your market probably don't trust your competitors if you don't. What does that mean? In my opinion, and I've used this strategy for the last 13 years in my business, okay, I have discovered that if I can come in and build trust faster than somebody else, then the sales will happen faster because of the trust. And in fact, sometimes people will look at a flashy sales letter. They will say, you know what, I'm not ready to jump on an emotional bandwagon, but Sean has built trust with me. I trust Sean, and so therefore I will invest. I believe that that's what you want. I'm just saying this. I believe that that's what you want to do, that you want to build trust so that you can generate a larger number of more highly qualified prospects over time into the future. And so this leads me to a concept called storyline. Okay? The question is, if you look at a 30-day period of time on your list, and the truth of the matter is, the bulk of the trust that you're going to develop the people that are going to begin to trust you, I believe most of that's going to happen within 30 days. Will you continue to build on trust later? Yes. But the beginnings of that trust are going to happen in 30 days, and the beginnings of the beginning are going to happen the very first day. And in fact, the beginnings of the beginnings of the beginnings happened in the 7 to 14 touches people had before they ever got to know you. Okay. So, what do we want that storyline to look like? What does it take to build a trust-based storyline? What does it take? Now, I believe, obviously, we could look at all the power principles, and we could look at all the trust-based principles. We could look at all of them and say, okay, well, there's 14 trust principles, and what can I do in my campaign to make each one of those happen? But what I'm getting ready to give you, let me say this before I say that. What happens is a lot of times if we think of 14 different components to put into our campaigns, we just become confused. I do. I become confused, and I've been doing this for years and years and years. And so what I've discovered is that there's a few critical components that people need to trust you. Okay? Number one, I believe that they need to know that you know your stuff. Okay? They need to know that you know your stuff. And what that means is they've got to be able to find articles and YouTube videos and organic social media, if that's what you want to do. They've got to be able to read or ingest or watch or listen to content that teaches them something. That doesn't pretend to teach them something. It just doesn't talk about how great you are, but that teaches, that genuinely teaches them something. I just believe that's powerful. Now, so much of the marketing out there doesn't start with teaching them something. And I think that some of that has to do with that a lot of marketing is done by creative people people that get into the right words at the right time. Now, I don't know how well you know this about me, but I'm a very logical thinker. I have the ability to think holistically, and I tend to be creative. Don't we all think we're better at everything than we really are, right? But I can tell you this, that I have a weakness. And my weakness is that when I try to persuade, it's with the facts, not with emotion. And so often folks try to persuade with emotion. I have to laugh because every once in a while the new book will come out on negotiation, you know, getting your way and winning your way. And there's all these tricks and there's all these scenarios to set up. And I'm like, do I really want to set up all of these scenarios so I can get a $7 discount when I go buy something? You know, do I really want to set up all, do I have to set up this whole scenario so I can convince my wife to do a certain thing? Look, if I can't convince her with the facts, then I might as well just say, okay, you don't want to do this. I'll go watch a movie by myself. It's okay. Like I don't need to set up some, I was going to use manipulative, but you don't have to be manipulative to be a good persuader, all right? But I don't need to set up an emotional, psychological persuasion framework in order for me to express to other folks that this might be kind of the way to go. Now, Dave, even if you think about the training that I've given you today, have there been a few moments of opinion? Yes. And I've used those moments of opinion simply to set up some contrast with what I'm giving you as being my storyline, right? And keep in mind that my storyline about the trust curve might be different than somebody else's storyline about the trust curve, because each one of us, you and me and any of your competitors and any of my competitors, we each have our own worldview. We each have our own education view. We have our own marketing view. So we're not all cookie cutters. And by the way, one more opinion. I think a lot of times folks struggle with marketing because they hear from somebody that's telling them that there's a cookie cutter way that they have to do marketing. And it just creates a bunch of cookie cutter marketers that aren't able to be creative. So what I've done with you today, if you think about this, if you imagine that what I've done today, it would be an attempt to persuade or an attempt to create a storyline, is for the most part, I have given you logical reasons why creating a trust-based storyline builds trust the fastest in your campaign so that folks will trust you to purchase at a higher level and, not sure if I've mentioned this yet, but will get them to trust you repeatedly in future campaigns. Let me ask you this. Would you rather be a marketer that does a great job of getting 10% of all your leads to buy something in the first 7 days, but almost none of those leads will ever buy from you again? Or would you rather be a marketer that only 3% of people buy from you in the first 7 days, but those 3% buy from you again and again and again and again? Because what happens is, if you build trust, people will buy again and again and again and again. Ultimately, they'll spend more money with you than if you're using non-trust-based methods to get an immediate sale, but then the product doesn't deliver. So what I've given you, and I believe I do this in almost all of my marketing, in my articles, in my YouTubes, and then in the training that I deliver. So if you purchase training, it's going to logically say, do this, do this, do this, do that. And I believe that because of the logical basis of the training, it leads people to trust more so that they will continue to buy. And it's not even so that they will continue to buy. It's that they do continue to buy. Just a moment. I'm going to take a sip of coffee. Thank you. I needed that. All right, let's get back to the task at hand. Okay? So I just personally believe that logically teaching whatever it is that you teach gives people structure so that they know where they're at, they know what they're doing, and they know where they're going to go. And because of that, you're able to logically present the idea that folks should purchase additional training down the road. The second thing that I believe that's necessary, okay, is being able to present yourself as being human in the campaign. I'm using email campaign because I still believe it's the very best way to develop the greatest level of ongoing trust. You know, can we see greater percentage numbers in other areas of, you know, botting or messaging? Yes. Is the trust level as high? I'm not so sure. And again, we all have our opinions. That's my opinion. It's how I've marketed for a long time. It continues to be extremely powerful for me. I believe it will continue to be for a long time into the future. So when we are dealing with this idea of building a personableness, then we can do that in email. Now, can we combine that with social media? Yes. But let's just talk about email as being kind of the primary front. I believe that whatever we can do to make our email campaign most feel like it's a person and not a company. You see, people want to learn from a person if necessary. Now, if possible. If it's necessary for them to purchase from a company, then they'll do it because nobody else is teaching. But as soon as somebody comes into the market that's a person, the person can topple the entire market because people are attracted to a personality. And so, and I'm not going to go into this whole idea of telling all these stories. You can use a hero's journey story. You can do hero's journey at a macro level. You could do hero's journey in an email. You can do hero's journey in an article. You can do hero's journey in a YouTube. You can do hero's journey in a product that you have. You can also spread a hero's journey out over a 30-day campaign, over a 60-day campaign, or even a 365-day campaign. And so you can layer all of those types of things in. You can use all the persuasion trust factors. You can layer those into everything that you do. Okay? But what I want to talk with you here about is just saying, how can we be personable? And I believe that personableness in the business world mirrors personableness in the offline world. So if you meet somebody at a coffee shop, Are you going to grow closer to that person if you spend 10 minutes a day with them for 10 days, meeting at the coffee shop every day at 9 o'clock? You just happen to bump into them. You get to the same place in line. You sit at the table and talk for 10 minutes. Or are you going to grow closer if on the very first interaction they tell you their entire life story? Now, it's easy for us to say, well, I would grow closer to somebody if I heard their life story. You're absolutely right. But psychologically, does that happen in the real world? You see, what happens normally psychologically in the real world, if you meet somebody and they tell you everything there is to know about them in the first 2 hours that you've met them, then there's nothing to build the rest of your relationship on. Think about that. And so because of that, relationships don't tend to continue to move at a pace. But if there's an unveiling of who you are over time in that coffee shop, you tend to build a stronger solidarity of relationship, even if it didn't happen as fast. And I believe the same thing should happen via email. And, you know, I know a lot of marketers will tell their entire story on day one. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that it appeals to fast action takers, and it bonds quickly. But I think that it pulls back from the opportunity to make it feel like a genuine relationship over time. So what if you were to do the opposite? You were to say, well, in each email, I'm going to drop a little hint about something in my life that is personable, that relates to what I'm doing, okay? So maybe in the first email, you drop the idea that you do are an expert at this particular topic, okay? But so that you don't come across as arrogant, you say, but I'm not an expert at this other area, okay? Notice how I did that today. By admitting to you that I am not an expert in all of the persuasion and all of that, but that I instead choose to use logic, I am able to build up the idea that for me, using logic to build trust is my preferred mechanism. Okay? But if I were not to counter it with the opposite side and admit that I'm not an expert at that as well, then I would sound phony. Does that make sense? So if everything you write in your emails is about how wonderful you are, people are going to be put off by that. Think about that. If you meet somebody and all they ever tell you is how wonderful they are, then they are going to begin to feel as though you are a phony. And people don't like to buy from phonies. But if you're able to drip a little bit out about you, and relate it to your life as it pertains to your niche. Okay, so for example, in what I do is I teach marketers how to build these strong long-term campaigns that generate good revenue, change lives, and build businesses. Okay, so therefore, I'm going to make almost all of my stories relate to that path. I might tell a story about how I sold candy in high school. I might tell my initiation creation story online. I might tell a story about, I remember when I did my first big JV campaign. It was amazing to do. I had a guy pushing me to do it. I bought some fancy software. If I remember correctly, I don't remember the details, but it seems like I stayed up way past or all night long at 9 or 2 and plus all day long trying to figure this software out. And I learned a lot about trying to use software to do things. When you're just doing them for a one-time thing, you might as well just, you know, buy a solution that will, you know, somebody else's solution that you can just plug in rather than trying to download all your own software for one deal. I download all my software. I got all the settings right, 3 or 4 days. The launch was not a great success. And if I remember correctly, I never used software again. And so now that's a story that I would normally tell to back up some point. In this case, I told part of the story to show you how to pique curiosity, and I was able to do it in just 3 or 4 sentences just now. I told you about something that I was excited about doing. I put somebody else into it by saying that they were kind of pushing me to do this. Notice I didn't put blame. I just said they were pushing me to do it. I probably wasn't quite ready, but I'm excited about doing it, so I did it. I bought this new piece of software. Don't buy software for something short term. You know, I'm able to tell that story. I say, boy, it was just a total loss. Now, if I was doing a full hero's journey, I would have kind of the fighting the dragon's den after my total loss. I would say that I came back from the ashes, and I decided that from now on, for affiliate solutions, I was going to use a well-known solution, even if it meant I paid 3% or 1% of sales or whatever, on somebody else's platform where they do all the heavy lifting, and I get to do what I'm good at. I'm good at teaching, and I'm good at writing emails. Why should I be an affiliate platform, right? And so notice I'm able to tell that story. There's a crescendo. There's a peak. There's a great fall. There's a recovery. There's the kind of the road to the future kingdom where we talk about all of this from the hero's journey. But I was able to encapsulate that all in about four sentences there. You can do that in your emails. And if in every one of your first 10 emails, you have a one-paragraph story, you can even weave that story through your email. So you write the story, it's four or five sentences long, but then your email is going to be a teaching email that's three or four paragraphs long. You can tell the story at the beginning and then do the teaching, or you can start the story and then say, I'll be right back to the story, teach for a little bit, back to the story, tell the next sentence of the story, back to the teaching, tell the story. And you can even have a cliffhanger at the end that says, I think this email is long enough for today. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And then they're waiting for that next email. So this allows me to create an email campaign that builds trust by having a storyline in the email campaign. It allows me to deliver training, which gets them to trust me based on what I can teach them rather than the hype of testimonials and beautiful pictures and all of that. Okay? So those two components allow me to build trust. Now, you know, if you studied for me for a long time, there's another component that I drip in. I don't want to make a big deal about it here, but I don't want to not talk about it because I don't want you to feel like, oh, he doesn't teach that anymore. I do this as well. And this is that you drop in third-party credibility. People believe that you are more credible if you've been published somewhere besides your own place. I used to counsel clients to go out and find a few websites in their niche and beg, pay, whatever it takes to get one article on those websites and hopefully a profile, because it builds credibility. If you'll write a book, all you got to do is write a 40-page Kindle short and you have a book. Put a cover on it, you are now a published author at Amazon, for example. Now, does that mean that that carries the same weight as a big book? No, but I've had clients in the past say, well, does this mean I can't create trust on a 10-day campaign if I don't have a book? Of course not, my friend. But what I am saying is, why not write a page a day for the next 365 days and publish a big book, and a year from now, you can add that to your 10-day campaign. And so what this means is, if you've been featured in an interview, put that interview in your first 10 days. You can put that in a PS. You could make day 7 be, hey, I was featured in this interview. I wanted to share this with you. So the external credibility becomes a part of your storyline. Okay, now I'm going to wrap things up, but I want to share with you something at a deeper level. So today, through today's lesson, and what have I done in today's lesson? I've used my three components of trust in today's lesson. I've used the component of knowledge by teaching you something that I know that you probably haven't heard all the pieces to before. Okay, so I've taught you something new. The second thing that I've done is I've told story, and so I've related what I'm doing to my own journey. And then the third thing that I've done is, and I haven't done this very much, really, but talking about third-party credibility. And I've really only done that today by referencing articles that I've written. And I did it at the very first minute, I believe, of this training, when I said, we used to write a lot of articles, it was 7 days was the average. That created that external credibility. And so I haven't done a whole lot with that. And I want you to see this idea that this may be a three-legged stool, but they excuse me, it doesn't have to be 33%, 33%, 33%. In real life, it's not that way. So if you want to mimic relationship building in real life, they're not going to all be the same. I might do, if I were to do my next training with my next group of clients, you know, if I were to teach something similar, I might talk a lot more about external credibility, maybe less about story and more about the logic. Today, I intended to focus most on the story. I think I put more logic in. But I want you to see that by including those three components, the message that I gave you had the most impact as a result. Okay? And imagine if you now were to use this component in every article you write, every YouTube you write, every email that you do, every interview that you do. Okay, so for example, how do we do that in an article? If we're writing an article, we use an example of something from somewhere else that we've been published. That lends credibility. We tell a story about ourselves that builds trust. And we teach something in every article that we do. It allows us to have this trust-based storyline, kind of a microcosm of this storyline in every article that you write. You can do the same thing with every YouTube video that you create. Even if it's a 5-minute video, you can have 3 minutes of teaching that should be rock solid. You can have 1 minute of telling a story, and now you've earned the right to be able to talk about something external. And it can be as easy as just dropping a hint, like, let's say you have 335 videos on YouTube. You can say, I have 335 live published videos right here on YouTube, and I'm excited about that. Okay, and maybe have a sentence about what that means for you. You know, that means a lot for me because it allows people to come to my YouTube channel, let's say that you teach weight loss, and be able to learn everything they need to know about weight loss just by going through my videos, for example. And then if they want more help, they can invest in my coaching, for example. Notice how I make an example by talking about third-party credibility. Third-party credibility can be heightened by cross-referencing. So if I'm on YouTube, I reference something I've done on LinkedIn. Or if I'm in Facebook, I reference something I've done in YouTube. Or if I'm writing an article, I might reference something I've done on Amazon. And by doing cross-referencing external credibility continues to build that credibility. Okay? Now, so I've shown you today in my teaching, I used a 10-day campaign as example. But now what if you were to have 3 10-day campaigns in your business so that there was 30 days? Okay? Now you think about what is the arc? What is your trust arc for the entire year? What is your trust arc for one article? What is your trust arc for one video? Each one of these trust arcs, every time somebody's exposed to you, they're going to get these three components of trust in varying percentages. And over time, it is going to build to the place where folks have a rock solid level of trust in you and in what you're doing. And when you're able to create that level of trust, okay, you're able to change more lives. As you're changing more lives, more people are paying you. More people are paying you more because they want to come back for more so that you're able to have a good life. You see, when you're building your business, and I'll end on this, when you're building your business, it should be win-win for your clients and it should be win-win for you. Okay, you obviously get paid as you change lives. People's lives are improved as they invest dollars in you, but you also get something other than just the dollars. You get validation. You get validation that you're giving something great to the world. Maybe you do something pro bono for somebody, and that gives you a sense of satisfaction. So there's so many positives that should be in every interaction, and I believe that all of the interactions that you have in your business should indeed be win-win. This has been Sean Mize with AnyoneCanCoach.com.